Hi everyone, it's Grace. Before we start our episode, I want to tell you about two things. First, the Where the Mountain Meets the Moon trilogy calendar I've been working on is finally out. It's available from the Eric Carle Museum bookstore, and if you purchase a book of mine at the same time, you'll get 10% off. The link is in the show notes. The second thing is that my other podcast, Kids Ask Authors, now has a Patreon page. Even if you don't listen to that podcast, becoming a patron helps this podcast too, since I produce both of them, and support would be greatly appreciated. And if you become a patron of that podcast, there are some really great perks, like the exclusive Random Question podcast only for patrons. On that podcast, I ask authors extremely random questions with always interesting answers. Don't you want to know what food Jason Reynolds can't bring himself to eat? Or what Jacqueline Woodson always buys at the grocery store? Become a patron of Kids Ask Authors to find out. The link is also in the show notes. Thanks so much, and now on to our episode.
Hi, I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lynn.
And we're Book Friends Forever.
We're childhood friends that grew up to be
a children's book editor
and an author and illustrator.
Welcome to Book Friends Forever, the body positivity and health at every size episode. Every week we catch up with each other's lives, talk about what's on our minds, and share with each other what we're grateful for.
And if you enjoy our podcast, please tell a friend about it and check out our website, bookfriendsforever.com. The website will include more detailed show notes as well as links to the episodes.
And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps with discoverability, so thank you everyone who has already rated and reviewed our podcast.
So today, Alvina and I have a special guest on the podcast, illustrator Phoebe Wall. Hi, Phoebe, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Great. Phoebe, can you introduce yourself to our podcast listeners?
Yeah, my name is Phoebe Wall. I use she, her pronouns, and I am a children's book author, illustrator, and a surface designer in Bellingham, Washington.
Wonderful. Thank you for joining us. And we should also thank listener Melissa. Melissa sent a very thoughtful email that gave us the idea to talk about this topic, and also she suggested that we talk to you, Phoebe. So as we told you, and as you know, we always start by catching up on each other's lives. So Grace, why don't you start? How have you been?
I've been really, really tired. For listeners who's listened in the past episodes, you know that I've decided to try to wake up. I'm trying to wake up at like 4:30 in the morning so I can get more work done. And so I've been waking up earlier, but it's been hard. Like I can really feel the tiredness. So it's I'm waiting for my body to adjust. And once it adjusts, I'm sure it'll be great. But right now, I feel that overall fatigue during the day.
Have you been able to go to sleep earlier as well?
Yeah, I think it's yes, I definitely go to sleep earlier. I mean, it's only been for like 3 or 4 days, so I think by next week I'll have adjusted, because it's almost when I try to go to sleep, I can't get to sleep because I'm not used to going to sleep at that time either. So it's like I'm getting tired. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to sleep a little earlier and waking up earlier. So
I am really impressed. That is so early.
It is early.
It's good though. I am getting more work done, and I'm really glad to do that. And oh, and I'm also like, I almost don't want to say anything about it because I'm afraid that I'll jinx myself, but I'm so close to actually forming a pod with some other families for my daughter's school, and I'm just like crossing my fingers it all works out. I'm almost, like I said, I'm afraid to talk about it, but I think I might actually have a pod forming. Like I actually like I kind of, I don't want to say I bullied myself in, but I was like, hey, how about us? Like, I really, like, pushed ourselves in there. So, but I think they seem pretty welcoming. So, crossing my fingers, it works out.
Nice.
So maybe by next week, you can tell us if it worked.
Yes, hopefully.
Phoebe, how have you been in the last couple of weeks?
I've been good. Really wildly busy. And I just got home from camping. I was camping last weekend, which was really wonderful. My partner and I were supposed to get married on August 1st, but it got postponed because of the pandemic. So camping last weekend was kind of like a nice way to do something together and be like, yay, we would have been getting married. So, and then once I got home, it's just kind of been like playing catch up, working on a whole bunch of stuff. I'm in post-production for this animation I've been working on and working on my next book and working on release stuff for my book that just came out. And I have a almost 14-year-old stepson also. So we've been kind of trying to figure out what schooling is going to look like for him this fall too.
Much going on. Tell us the title of the book that just came out.
The book that just came out is called The Blue House.
It's so beautiful. I just got it.
Oh, awesome.
I know. Yeah. I read that too. It's so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's actually like a kind of a real life story of my partner and his son and their experience leaving their old house a couple years ago. So it was a pretty amazing experience just to kind of retell that story and, you know, create so many drawings of characters inspired by them and that old home. And it felt kind of therapeutic to make. And it's really cool getting to share it and like see how it also resonates with other people.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. I mean, I said that already, but it bears repeating.
Thanks.
And I'm just curious about your wedding. Like, did you plan a big wedding? When did you have to decide to make the decision to postpone it?
Yeah, we did have a pretty big wedding. I think we had like about 200 people we were going to invite. Wow. But we decided pretty early on. I think we decided in like May or even late April that we weren't going to do it because we were kind of at this point of planning where we were just about to send out invitations and like just about to start giving people money and down payments. And so it felt like this crucial time where we were like, either we're gonna put a lot of money and energy and planning into this and then maybe have to cancel last minute, or we should just call it now because it really didn't seem like it was gonna work out. And now I'm really glad that we decided that then because it made the whole summer way less stressful to just have made the decision.
I think that was a very good call.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So you moved it to next summer?
Yeah, the plan is to do it early August next summer. And, you know, there's definitely a part of me that's like, oh, I hope we can do it next summer. You know, but hopefully, And it might have to kind of shape shift at some point if we want to say, well, we want to do this, so we might just have to make it smaller and it might have to look like something that we didn't plan for, but that's okay.
I'm just thinking after this pandemic, there's going to be such a boom of like weddings and like traveling.
Yeah.
Like it's going to like explode.
I know.
Because everybody's like pent up and like ready to go.
Totally. I know. I'm kind of like, oh God, I don't know if I'm going to want to take a honeymoon next summer if that's allowed because traveling will be nuts.
So, Alvina, how have you been?
Well, I am currently on vacation, so I am wonderful. I spent last week just kind of wrapping up work, and I was actually super productive, I think, because I was trying to get everything done. I, of course, did not get everything done, but that's all right. Now, you know, I'm here in Vermont and enjoying Vermont. So earlier today, we went on a little, you know, about half an hour away on a little hike up a mountain, a short-ish hike. It was about a mile. So as I decided when we reached the top, it was fairly low effort for high reward because the view was amazing, but it wasn't a very strenuous hike. So, but it was really lovely. And I had two maple creamies today. And that was nice. I'm just enjoying vacation. So I'm just, you know, and it's basically my first official day on vacation, you know, like where, you know, I know that everyone else is working, not in the office, but working in the home office. And yeah, and I'm not, so I feel good.
Wow.
So this is the Body Positivity and Health at Every Size episode, as I mentioned. And Grace and I, as our listeners know, have both talked about our weight and kind of fitness routines and kind of some of our struggles with it in past episodes. And I know we've very likely maybe inadvertently furthered fat phobia, which is prevalent in our society. And Phoebe, I was looking at your Instagram posts, and I saw that you quoted a piece you wrote for the SCBWI Bulletin called "What Want More Body Positive Books Do Better by Fat Characters." And I think, you know, that kind of, I think, was a really helpful entry point for Grace and I, and also many of our listeners. I think, you know, I think if we look at this issue in a way of parallel to what we've been talking about for a very long time about other, like, diversity issues when it comes to race, you know, like, we never saw Asian princesses when we were kids, and you never saw any fat princesses. So can you talk a little bit more about this and your experience as a child?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think it's something that's really close to my heart, and that I think I have started really diving deeper into just researching the history of all this stuff and kind of getting more and more radicalized in the last few years. And a lot of that has come with my own body getting bigger. I mean, I think, unfortunately, it's like sometimes it really takes your own personal experience changing before you can kind of put these connections together of being kind of like, oh, this is actually really screwed up. And but I think, you know, I always had issues with food and body as a kid. I was like always a chubbier kid, an adolescent, and definitely felt really like I didn't, you know, fit into this certain box, you know, even if there's lots of ways I did fit into the box, you know, being white, being cisgender, you know, but still, you know, the box is so small and so narrow. And I, you know, I was kind of like a tomboyish kid too. And so, you know, I was this kid with like my pink cheeks and my brown bowl cut and, you know, like running around. And I really didn't see many characters that looked like me in books. You know, I think the one book that I can remember that I really felt a kinship to are the Sophie books by Dick King Smith. He wrote Babe and a bunch of other well-known books, but I don't know if the Sophie books are super well-known, but she's kind of described as like a stocky child. And I remember just being like, oh yeah, that's like me, you know? And it, 'cause you really don't see any other representations that are positive or even neutral. I mean, I talked a lot about this in my article I did, is that it's, fat bodies are really coded as villains most of the time, or allegories for laziness or greed, or all these kind of other vices. And so it really is teaching kids, you know, through books and through tons of other media, that their body is like deviant and undisciplined, and is kind of inherently bad.
Yeah, no, that's true. And it's interesting. I think when we think about how things are now, it's like, you know, you look at all the Disney movies and it's like, I think fat and also like kind of coded as like gay or LGBTQ characters are
and
always
disabled a lot too.
Yeah. For a while, like, and yeah, foreign. And also dark.
Well, and foreign too. Like they were saying how like the villains, you notice the villains usually have an accent, even in like the Lion King, like the evil brother, like even they're brothers, but the evil brother has an accent, you know, like it's very interesting. Yeah.
Did you have a situation where you read a book as a child that like you just like kind of felt like a, oh God, like a gut punch, or just like that you felt was harmful?
Yeah. Like one specific, Harry Potter. And you know, now of course, I mean, J.K. Rowling has proved herself to be problematic in so many ways. And I saw a funny meme on Twitter or something that was kind of like, fat kids have always known J.K. Rowling is problematic. And I really say that as like a huge Harry Potter fan, like massive, that definitely I've kind of been thinking a lot more critically about lately. But I mean, I was such a massive fan of those books. And the way that she draws parallels between fat bodies and just being evil or mean or disgusting or greedy is pretty, you know, laid bare. It's very obvious. And other times, which I think I also reference in my SCBWI article, you know, the times where there's a fat person who's nice, like Mrs. Weasley, she's still this very matronly, motherly, desexualized character. She's not, you know, she's kind of allowed to be fat because she has, you know, seven kids. But yeah, I think those for me were definitely a gut punch. I remember, like, I think because it was a part of the language in like the 90s and early 2000s when I was growing up too. Like, I remember being called Dudley Dursley and just knowing that that's an insult. Like, I mean, and knowing that it's an insult not because he's mean, but because of his body. Like, that read loud and clear to me that when someone calls you Dudley Dursley, they're not saying you're mean. They're saying you're fat and that's bad.
Did you, you mentioned that you felt like in the last couple of years, you used the word radicalized.
Yeah.
What are some ways that you feel like you've been radicalized, and what are some of the things you've been doing in the last couple of years?
Yeah. I mean, I started seeing a Health at Every Size therapist, which I think really, started kind of getting me down the track I'm on now, because I initially really just picked a therapist out of the, you know, Psychology Today menu for weight loss specifically, and then happened to click the one person who is Health at Every Size and, you know, basically anti-weight loss for all intents and purposes. And I actually think that really saved my life. Like, not like I think I would have died otherwise, but I think she gave me life. Like, she's given me time and so much more freedom to be able to focus on other more important things than my weight. And so that was incredible because she just really connected me with tons of resources in terms of podcasts, people to follow on social media, books. And I think, you know, even before I was working with her, I was definitely kind of within the more mainstream body positivity movement. And I think the mainstream body positivity movement, you know, has a lot of downfalls at this point because I think it's kind of been diluted through capitalism and pop culture and a little bit co-opted and away from its more radical roots. But, you know, what I have to say for it is that sometimes it really does provide a pathway in. And I think for me, like, it did kind of plant some seeds and provided a little bit of a pathway in so that those ideas weren't completely foreign to me. But yeah, I think she really connected me with lots of resources. And when I went to her and was kind of like, I want to lose weight. I've just been trying to do this my whole life. And I'm just not disciplined enough. You know, I'm just not trying hard enough. And she said, like, well, I want to know why this is something you feel like you need to do. And that kind of just cracked my entire world open because I really had never questioned, even through knowing about body positivity, you know, that that I could just not be trying to make myself smaller all the time. And that was a pretty big deal because it's so normalized. I mean, the way that we talk about constantly shrinking our bodies and needing to correct our bodies and behaving like they're something that have failed, I mean, is so, so normalized. And I think, you know, when I listened to the podcast that the listener emailed in about, you know, my first feeling about your conversation was like so much compassion. Cause I think, like, who hasn't been, I think especially, you know, women, like, who hasn't been in that position, it can be really destabilizing and, like, I think can create real grief and, like, fear when you put on something that's supposed to make you feel comfortable and like yourself and it doesn't fit. So I felt a lot of compassion. And I think to me, what my, you know, more radical form of body positivity, which, you know, I call myself a fat liberationist. I don't necessarily, I think, like, I guess I would identify as like practicing radical body positivity, but I think it's hard because it's just kind of been so diluted at this point that I want to be clear about the fact that I work towards fat liberation. And to me, what the fat liberation community and those resources have given me is just language and tools to turn, you know, that disappointment that's so normal and so understandable to feel when we feel like our bodies are starting to deviate from the norm or from this idea of we think how they should be. And it can kind of take all those feelings and that frustration and turn it back onto the culture rather than onto ourselves and say, you know, isn't it, you know, like, wow, I'm feeling a lot of things coming up for me when these pants don't fit the way I want them to fit. And that's bringing up a lot of fear and grief. And isn't it wild how much our culture makes us fear our bodies getting bigger, you know, and really starting to question, who does that benefit? Who does that fear that we've all been given benefit? Who profits off of that fear? And who is stigmatized and oppressed on the flip side of that fear?
That's so interesting. Do you, you mentioned that, that your therapist had recommended some resources, some, you know, can you name a few for our listeners?
The first one that she recommended to me that I found amazingly helpful was the podcast called Food Psych, which is a podcast by a dietitian named Christy Harrison. And she interviews different dietitians and fat activists and writers and journalists on her show. And it, you know, it took me a while to even listen because my therapist was like, you know, this is about eating disorders and, you know, fat liberation. And I was kind of like, well, I don't have an eating disorder. I don't, you know, I don't have those things. And I worked really hard at first to distance myself from this idea that I had these issues. And I think so much of that is kind of this interesting coding into like weakness and kind of really not wanting to admit that like I was like one of those women, which, you know, is like so totally problematic. Once I kind of had the courage to listen and be like, you know, I might benefit from information for this, it just really opened a huge new world to me and a can of worms to hear the doctors and all the authors and everyone who she talks to, just about weight and weight science and health. And these ideas we're given, you know, about what is healthy, what is beautiful, and who gave us those ideas, you know, what's the history behind that? And also what's the real harm that, they continue to have. And so Food Psych by Christy Harrison. That's a podcast. That was a big one. She also came out with a book this year called Anti-Diet that's really good, and it talks a lot about the history of, you know, diet culture and dieting and the kind of covert ways it shows up in our culture now, and just about, you know, the harm that weight cycling and weight loss attempts, you know, actually kind of cause our health and how they're can be pretty ineffective, really. But it's, you know, it's this kind of capitalist Ouroboros of like constantly, you know, tricking you into pursuing this thing to make money and to kind of like promote these ideals. And so she kind of goes into a lot of the kind of snake oil behind a lot of weight loss stuff, which is really interesting. So her book and her podcast are great. And I also just read a really fantastic book that my therapist recommended too more recently called Fearing the Black Body by Sabrina Strings. And that book talks a lot about the intersection of fat phobia and racism, you know, and all about how, you know, these ideas we have about, you know, what is a beautiful person? What is a healthy person? You know, like, and these ways that we've kind of all been taught to assimilate towards one ideal are completely rooted in, you know, colonialism and white supremacy, and, you know, the usual big bad guys.
I'm going to check that book out.
Yeah, sounds great. I have two thoughts. One is, do you think you could elaborate a little bit? I think we are so fed the myth that to be healthy, you have to be thin, you know? Do you think you can talk a little bit about that a little?
Yeah, totally. And you know, one thing I want to say too is like, I'm not a health practitioner. So so like all the information is that I have to share is really things that I have researched in, you know, different articles and which we can talk more about and the books that I just brought up. But yeah, I mean, from what I've read, it really seems like health, you know, is something that is so much more complex and less binary than this way we've kind of been given to think about it as, you know, and look like. And a lot of it has to do with social determinants. So Christy Harrison talks a lot about social determinants, and so does Virgie Tovar, who's another really awesome fat positive writer and researcher. Which are basically, you know, things like do we grow up with access to enough food and clean water and medical care? And also, like, how impacted are we by structural oppression like racism or weight stigma or ableism or any number of other things that have been scientifically proven to be really impactful on people's health? You know, stress and the stress of experiencing oppression is really, really damaging to people's health. And my understanding is there really hasn't been a lot of studies about focusing on people at higher weights that control for all of these different things that we know make a massive impact, a massive negative impact on people's health. And so really, that is kind of my best understanding of it, is that, like, health is this massively complicated thing. And
weight or size is just one small tidbit of that
yeah,
that we've blown up to make a big thing about.
Exactly. And we actually really don't have a lot of data that supports it being the thing that makes this big difference. When we do, but we do know, you know, that being stigmatized for being in a larger body does cause adverse health effects. And so, you know, we don't know whether high blood pressure that someone in a larger body is experiencing is because they're in a larger body, or is because every time they go to the doctor, they experience so much stress, you know, that it's like raise their blood pressure. So that is kind of, I guess, like a small distillation of it. And I think, like, Christy's book has tons of resources about the health aspects. And also, you know, you mentioned health at every size in the title of the episode. And health at every size is this, you know, paradigm that was created by Dr. Lindo Bacon. And they also wrote a really awesome book called Body Respect, in addition to a book called Health at Every Size, that really goes really in depth into all the science and studies and has tons of, you know, peer-reviewed scientific evidence and all kinds of stuff. And there's some other articles, too, that I, you know, kind of have to have on hand, you know, for when I go to the doctor and I want to go in and be like, actually, I don't want to talk about my weight, and here's why. Lindo Bacon did an awesome article recently with Amy Severson for the Scientific American called Fat Is Not the Problem, Fat Stigma Is, that talks a lot about how a lot of the, you know, adverse health things we see in larger bodies are actually probably more because of weight stigma than being in a larger body. And, you know, I think one really important thing to think about with health as well is, like, why are we so hyper-focused on health? Why do we kind of uphold it in our culture as this thing that we should constantly be striving towards? And that's not to say, like, you know, it doesn't matter at all. But I think it's really important to investigate the ways that we talk about it, because, you know, health for most people really isn't a choice. We're really not in control of it for the most part, from what I've read. You know, I think Christy in her book talks a lot about how, you know, we control, I want to say it's like 30% or less of our health through individual behaviors. And the rest of it is mostly determined by social determinants. Mm-hmm. And so if it's something that's completely out of our control, like, why do we kind of have this really obsessive relationship with it? And also, again, like, who is being harmed? Who is being oppressed by this idea that to be healthy is to be good, and to kind of align that with morality, and kind of say, like, this is this thing we should all be striving towards? Because I think that just gets really into pretty ableist, pretty healthist territory really quickly also, because there's so many people who have chronic illnesses or have disabilities and will never be, you know, quote unquote healthy or this perfect picture of health.
Yeah, I think the way that you phrased it about, like, health being a morality issue is really mm-hmm. kind of the crux of the of I guess the problem, I guess, mm-hmm. or the idea being, like, we've equated being thin with being a good person, and that's so not the case.
Or as you said earlier, like, discipline, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you Yeah, and I think also the problem is, you know, our societal cultural beauty standards are so unrealistic
and narrow
for everybody. Yeah. And the fact that you can then, you know, use the shame, like saying like, well, you know, then you're not healthy and you're not beautiful. And it's just this like terrible cycle. And
totally. Yeah. And when we use those things to measure value, you know, it gets really dangerous. And when you kind of distill it down and think about it for what it really is, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of like, well, what is it called when a society strips certain bodies of, you know, their humanity and measures them against one narrow, you know, specific ideal of beauty and health and upholds that as superior? You know, what is it called when a culture... you know, pushes people to assimilate towards that one ideal. And it kind of turns into eugenics really quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking recently also, you know, and kind of equating race issues with mm-hmm. body positivity issues because, you know, like, I think as women, we might look at, like, for example, like, oh, my belly, like, I have too much fat around my belly.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I hate that or I'm ugly, you know. Mm-hmm. And kind of the same way as a child, when I'm like, oh, I don't want to be Asian. Like, I want to be, you know, I want to be white. Like, it's that kind of self-hatred is terrible. Mm-hmm. For children and anybody, but it's that similar because it's like we're trying to, you know, fit into kind of society's standards and it's terrible.
Completely.
Well, what would you suggest? Well, for example, like I remember reading Lindy West's memoir, a while ago, where she talks about how, you know, she spent I forget exactly the detail, but she spent a lot of time on kind of body positivity sites. And to in order to kind of believe that she's beautiful, and it worked. And she said it worked. Are there things like that that you would suggest to listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think similar to Lindy's suggestion, and she has been a really, you know, influential writer in person. And I would suggest following her. but I, you know, similar to her suggestion, I do think, you know, kind of looking into your social media and like who you're seeing, what kind of bodies you're seeing. Over and over and over again, really can make a difference. Like I have found it really empowering to start following people with larger bodies and just a more diverse array of bodies, you know, Black people and trans people and, you know, disabled activists. Like I think it really can make a huge impact because we're given, you know, the same six ideas of what people should look like over and over and over again normally. And so it, I think makes a huge difference to kind of broaden what kind of people you're looking at and support those people's work in turn. But yeah, so I would say, you know, look critically at your social media, follow people with bodies that look different than yours and also, you know, maybe bodies that look more like yours rather than kind of having people you follow for like aspirational stuff, you know? And I think, you know, I mean, a huge part of where diet culture and fat phobia shows up in our culture right now is kind of in this like insidious wellness culture. And I think, you know, that might be something to investigate on social media too, is like, how are the people you're following talking about food and how it relates to their body and stuff like that. So I would definitely say kind of open up your social media feed and do research. I mean, reading the books that I mentioned, and there's, you know, tons of other really great books. Virgie Tovar, who I mentioned, has a great book that's a great kind of intro into fat liberation and radical body positivity called You Have the Right to Remain Fat. And it's really a quick little read. And so I think that could be a great option for someone who's kind of just starting to dip their toes into the waters of fat positivity. And she has a new book too. It's called Self-Love Revolution, and it's like specifically for young girls of color is who it's geared towards. And then Angie Manfredi, who's a children's librarian, she also had a book that she edited that was like a compilation come out last year, I want to say, called The Other F Word, and that's like a whole bunch of art and poetry and writing by different folks in the fat acceptance community. And, you know, a big person who I would suggest following on social media, and I think they have social media like on all platforms is Your Fat Friend, YR. Your is YR, Fat Friend. And they're an anonymous writer who just writes and posts a ton about fat liberation and justice and kind of like a lot of the intersections related to that. And they're like just such an incredible resource and have done so much work compiling tons of resources as well. Like I think they have a whole Amazon list. If you go to their website, you can click like an Amazon list of like all these book recommendations about, you know, fat liberation and radical body positivity. And they've written tons of articles and post really helpful, awesome infographics. Like, I think a lot of, you know, my thin friends have found it really helpful to follow them to kind of be consistently confronted with viewing fat liberation as a social justice issue. I think like a lot of people in my community are very social justice oriented, and it's been really helpful to kind of like, you know, like you guys are talking about, you know, view it kind of in tandem with these other issues in our culture as kind of being like, this is something we need to work on. And, you know, I think similar to anti-racism work too, a huge part of it is developing your own kind of like internal critical voice that's kind of looking at things in a different way, and looking at media and being more critical.
And that was part one of the Body Positivity and Health at Any Size episode. And now we'll end as we always do with what we're grateful for. So at the end of part two, we have a grateful segment that includes Phoebe, but we thought since, of course, it's always nice to end with what we're grateful for, this is our grateful from the future.
Yay!
So Grace, what are you grateful for this week?
Okay, what am I grateful for this week? I am grateful for the Eric Carle Museum of Picture Book Art. They are open again, which is really nice. They, you know, because of the pandemic, it was closed. And they are selling my calendars, you know, my Where the Mountain Meets the Moon trilogy calendars. And they've been selling pretty well. It's been really nice because they take care of the shipping. They take care of everything. Like, all I have to do is drop off the calendars. All I have to do is sign the books or sign the calendars for them. And so, like, I go in on every Sunday so far and I drop it off. And what's been really nice is that I go with my daughter and we go and play, like we play in the art studio. Like they have like a little art project and we get to do the art project and we get to see the exhibits a bit. But I am really grateful for having that, being able to do that with her. It's super fun. And I'm really grateful that they're selling my calendars too. Hopefully, and you can get one too, listeners.
Yay. Check out the show notes.
Yes. Okay, Albina, what are you grateful for?
Well, because we're recording this on Labor Day, and this is the last day of my vacation, but when you hear this, I'll be talking more about my vacation next week's episode. But I do have to say I'm grateful for Vermont, and I'm grateful to be here right now during this time. I mean, Vermont has been really, really great about keeping the pandemic under control and keeping COVID rates really low. You know, when I go out, you know, I have been, you know, doing some in restaurant dining, not too much, mostly it's outdoor, but at every restaurant, they make you write down like everybody in your party and a phone number, you know, so they can track. Everyone's really great about wearing masks. And I just feel really safe. And also there's so much just beautiful outdoor areas to explore for hiking and biking and fish, not fishing, although people do fish, hiking and yeah, and swimming. I'm really loving it here. And also what's been really nice is, we've had some visitors who are on vacation here. Actually just today we had lunch with my cousins who are staying at a resort, about 45 minutes away. And, you know, I haven't seen them since last fall. So, you know, we had lunch outside and then we, you know, went for a little walk and it was just so great to see them. So, you know, Burlington is really a destination area and it's been nice to have friends come visit. So I am grateful for Vermont.
Yay. And now here's our 2-minute book review segment featuring Allison Morris, Senior Director of Title Selection at First Book.
Hello, book friends. One of the questions I get asked a lot is, what can you recommend to a kid who's read everything by Dave Pilkey? So this week, I'm recommending two brand new graphic novels with those kids in mind. Get ready for the arrival in October of the new Max Meow series by John Gallagher, which launches with Cat Crusader, book one. It is perfect for Dogman fans. It has a similar sensibility, pacing, and trim size, and it is also really entertaining. Max is a cat-turned unexpected superhero when he's accidentally exposed to what appears to be a giant radioactive space meatball, but he's really not very good at being a superhero. Luckily, his scientist and inventor friend Mindy has brains aplenty, and with her help, he just might, maybe, be able to save Kittyopolis from an evil mouse called Agent M. It is a joy. If October feels too far away, you can focus your sights on September 1st, when we get book one of the new Dolphin Girl series by Zach Smith, Trouble in Pizza Paradise. And be prepared, because it is wacky, which is to say it is a lot of fun. It is the story of a superhero duo, Dolphin Girl and her dad, Captain Dugong, which is a relative of a manatee. Both of them are humans in aquatic mammal costumes with some limited aquatic mammal-inspired superpowers, and they together run a pizza restaurant and do battle with their restaurateur rival, the evil sea cow. This book has the feel of a very high-energy kids cartoon, and like a good cartoon, it will definitely elicit giggles. Look for Max Meow, Cat Crusader by Max Gallagher coming October 6th, and Dolphin Girl, Trouble in Pizza Paradise coming September 1st. I'm Allison Morris. That's Allison L. Morris on Twitter and Kid Lit Girl on Instagram. Thank you for listening and have a great week.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to Hachette Book Group, Hachette Audio, Little Brown Books for Young Readers, and Alex at Pacey Work Studio for producing and editing this podcast. You can find me at Planet Alvina on Twitter and at Alvina Ling on Instagram.
And I'm at Pacey Lin on both platforms. We love hearing feedback, so keep tagging and messaging us on social media using the hashtag BookFriendsForever or send us a message via our website, BookFriendsForever.com. You can also see more detailed show notes there.
And if you have any suggestions for future topics to cover, please let us know. And of course, please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you like this podcast, please tell a friend about it. I'm Alvina Ling.
And I'm Grace Lin.
Have a great week.
And happy reading!